Lesson number 7, A Patriot's Vision. In every epoch, God has called leaders to go before his people. As the chronicler said, they should know what Israel ought to do. When he calls them, the Spirit puts into their minds ideas, gives them a vision of the task ahead, and the methods for carrying it out. Nehemiah was such a leader. He envisioned delivering God's people from their enemies and helping to bring about a spiritual revival. This divinely inspired ideal drove him ahead in the face of incredible opposition. This principle is worth considering today. Whenever God calls a person into some leadership position, he does several things for that person. He puts ideas into his mind. Maybe he hadn't thought of these ideas before, but if he is called to some task, he will be given the insights he needs, a vision of what can be done, and he will be also shown the methodology that he should use to carry out what God wants him to do. Part number 1, Broken Walls, Burned Gates. The book of Nehemiah opens with Nehemiah living in Shushan, the summer capital of the Persian king. This town was located about 100 miles north of the Persian Gulf and was the setting of Daniel's vision of the cleansing of the sanctuary in Daniel chapter 8. It was also the capital where Esther was crowned queen. It was a very important center. Nehemiah was the king's cupbearer. That is, he was responsible for the monarch's life by ensuring him that he was not poisoned. And as we have already noted, Herodotus points out that the cupbearer was really a very important official. Not only a waiter at table. Nehemiah received a report from Hanani, telling him of the dilapidations in the city of Jerusalem and the crumbling walls which Esther had his helpers to restore some years before. The Jews had completed the temple under Zerubbabel in 515 B.C., About 60 years later, Ezra arrived in 457 with the decree of Artaxerxes directing him to organize the nation according to the Mosaic laws and set up a kind of theocracy. Now it was about 12 years later, in 445 BC. Nehemiah heard in faraway Persia that things were not going well. In fact, the hostile nations surrounding Jerusalem were undoing the work of restoration which had been carried out by Ezra. Part number 2, a patriot prays and a vision is born. These Samaritans had succeeded in turning Artaxerxes against the Jews by their false reports and accusations that they were traitorous, planning to revolt against the Persian rule. When Nehemiah realized what was taking place in Jerusalem, he was most distressed and earnestly prayed for divine help over the next few months while he continued to serve Artaxerxes. A vision gradually grew within him that he should lead a group of patriarchs to go back to Jerusalem to restore what had been broken down. But how was he going to bring this about? As he could see the political situation, there was no chance. The Jews where he lived, and you will remember that Mordecai was one of the leaders in the nation, a Jew, that there were many other Jews in the city and surrounding. They didn't seem about to be prepared to leave the luxury and the positions and the social surroundings to which they were used. Part number 3, diplomatic appeal. Nehemiah prayed for some 4 months that God would do something and help him to work things out. And as he prayed, he waited for God to open a favorable opportunity to request the king for help. And as he did so, he began to show signs in his expression, in his face, that he was under some kind of pressure. And the king remarked one day that he did not look like his old self. This was Nehemiah's opportunity. And after darting a prayer to God, he explained to Ahasuerus what he had heard was transpiring in his homeland, and asked for permission to visit his father's tombs and restore his city. Being asked one's state of health was all the excuse he needed to move into a request. His mind was right on the topic. He had been praying for some personal contact with Artaxerxes, and the Lord saw to it that it was opened out. Prudent planning. The Spirit moved the king to consider Nehemiah's request with favor. Prayer was answered. 4 months of prayer without any signs suddenly begin to be answered. Nehemiah then set about planning for all the eventualities he could think of, while he continued to pray for divine guidance. He needed to get a group of people together. He needed to spread the word. He needed to get enough transport animals. He needed to get food, shelter, supplies that they could cart along with them for a 4-month hike across the desert, down in the north, into northern Palestine, and on into the area around Jerusalem. This was a tremendous undertaking. Now, while he was making all these plans, he continued to pray to God for divine guidance. He never let up. Ellen White remarks, "This example of wise forethought and resolute action should be a lesson to all Christians. God's children are not only to pray in faith, but to work with diligent and provident care. They encounter many difficulties and often hinder the working of providence in their behalf because they regard prudence, painstaking effort, as having little to do with religion." Let me stop there and emphasize this. While Nehemiah prayed, while he was clearly conscious that God was working on his side, he didn't stop working himself. He had a part to play. He had jobs to do. He had contacts to make and material things to gather together. So he worked diligently with provident care. Careful consideration and well-mature plans are essential to the carrying forward of sacred enterprises today, as in the time of rebuilding of Jerusalem's walls. Now, we as Adventists are faced with all kinds of projects. We have global mission. We can look from the globe to our own divisions. We can look inwards from the divisions to our own unions and our own conferences and then to our own churches. Every church has a set of projects, set of priorities. Building up the members in the faith, ensuring that they are studying the Bible and praying, worshiping God, and not absenting themselves as the manner of some is, as Paul said so long ago. and they have to spread out outside their walls. They have neighbors, evangelism, missionary work to do. They have children to educate locally and in academies and colleges. What are they doing? How are they praying? What is on their prayer list? What priorities do they have? What sort of plans are they laying? All these questions find the answer in principle as Nehemiah prepared for his expedition. To help the Jews in their campaign of restoration, Nehemiah asked the king for material help. Ellen White notes, "Some may question the propriety of receiving gifts from unbelievers. Let such ask themselves, who is the real owner of our world? Who owns everything? God has an abundance in our world, and He has placed His goods in the hands of all, both the obedient and the disobedient. He is ready to move upon the hearts of worldly men, even idolaters, to give of their abundance for the support of His work. And He will do this as soon as His people learn to approach these men wisely and to call their attention to that which it is their privilege to do." Now, some among us sometimes take this request that Nehemiah made for material help to Ahasuerus, the king of Persia, as an excuse for accepting federal aid from governments. But the similarities must not be overlooked in face of the dissimilarities. Today, there are all kinds of vested interest, groups pressuring the government to grant monies for all kinds of projects. These monies are taken from taxes, people who don't want to give, and they're pushed into directions in which the givers would not give if they had any choice. What Ellen White here is commenting on, that God will do this to influence men to give of their money as soon as His people learn to approach these men wisely and call their attention to that which is their privilege to do. This has nothing to do with political activities. It has nothing to do with government aid. This was solicitation of gifts personally. And we can do that freely, even though these people are unbelievers. And I'm sure those of us who have led out in fundraising, when we visited friends and neighbors and followed up leads, have contacted all sorts of people and have raised money for the spreading of the gospel and the building up of his institutions. Nehemiah needed, his friend was Ahasuerus. He asked him, and he and his friends collected considerable resources. Part number 5, willing cooperation. Once in Jerusalem, Nehemiah worked swiftly. On the third night after their arrival, he took a few of his trusted friends and made a tour of the devastated areas in order to plan for their restoration. Notice this eyewitness description from the Spirit of Prophecy. Mounted on his mule, he moved about by moonlight, surveying the ruined walls and broken gates of the city of his fathers. Memories of Israel's past glory stood out in sharp contrast with the evidence of her present degradation. With sorrow-stricken heart, the visitor from afar gazed upon the ruined defenses of his loved Jerusalem. And is it not thus that the angels of heaven survey the conditions of the Church of Christ? Like the dwellers at Jerusalem, we become accustomed to exercising tolerance for existing evils, and often are content while making no effort to remedy them. But how are these evils regarded by beings divinely illuminated? Do not they, like Nehemiah, look with sorrow-burdened heart upon ruined walls and gates burned with fire? The holy energy, the high hopes of Nehemiah were communicated to the people. As they caught the spirit, they rose for a time to the moral level of their leader. Each in his own sphere was a sort of Nehemiah. Each strengthened and upheld his brother in the work. There is need for Nehemiahs in the church today. Not only men who pray and who preach, and like Ezra who give Bible studies, but men whose prayers and sermons are braced with firm and eager purpose. The course pursued by this Hebrew patriot in the accomplishment of his plans is one that should stir our admiration and bend our wills to comply with his methodology. These plans and methods should be adopted by ministers and leading men. When they have laid their plans, they should present them to the church in such a manner as to win their interest and cooperation. Let the people understand the plans, share in the work, and they will have a personal interest in its prosperity. The spirit manifested by the leaders in days gone by and replicated today will, to a great extent, be reflected by the people. What a challenge this story of Nebuchadnezzar holds for us today.